From NPR News, this is Foreign Dispatch, a weekly roundup of some of the best coverage of news and events filed by NPR's correspondents from around the globe. I'm Kevin Beasley. This week, what's next for the Arab Spring? Corruption in Chinese journalism, and the singer hoping to be the next leader of Senegal. ...2011 might have been the year of the so-called Arab Spring, but 2012 will be the year of making those popular uprisings sustainable. In both Egypt and Tunisia, voters recently took part in what, for many, were the freest elections in their lifetimes. But Tunisians and Egyptians are finding that even free elections won't necessarily lead to democracy. Here's NPR's Soraya Sahadi-Nelson.
Few Egyptians looked forward to what passed for elections when Hosni Mubarak was in power. Government-enlisted thugs bought or coerced votes from intimidated citizens in impoverished neighborhoods like Mina al-Basal in the northern port city of Alexandria. They made sure that just about no one, other than candidates from Mubarak's ruling party, won seats there. It's a far different scene these days in Mina al-Basal, where people who took part in the first election since Mubarak's ouster say they finally felt their votes mattered. Cheerful campaign volunteers working for candidates from across the political spectrum wooed the throngs of voters with speeches and pamphlets before and even during the recent parliamentary polls there. Among those offering voting advice were men with long beards, volunteers for the ultra-conservative Salafist movement. Manning their booth on one street corner was Sayed Ahmed Youssef. He says he's never felt this free to express himself politically. Youssef adds that transparent and fair elections are the only way to make sure Egypt becomes a democracy. But at a polling station across town in the upper-class neighborhood of Samoa, Ali Qasim expresses reservations about the polls after casting his vote. His nephew was 28-year-old businessman and sometime political activist Khaled Said, whose death in June 2010 helped provoke the uprising that ousted Mubarak. Said was killed by police officers who dragged him away from an internet cafe and slammed his head into nearby stone steps. The police claimed he was a drug peddler, charges his family and supporters rejected. Said's uncle, who ran for parliament on a secular centrist ticket, says the kind of impunity Mubarak and his security forces enjoyed will end if there's a duly elected government. But Qasim complains voters are being manipulated by some candidates, including those of the Salafist party. He and others accuse the fundamentalist movement of illegal campaign tactics, coercion, and backroom deals to garner votes. Independent monitors acknowledge some irregularities at the polls, but overall they've declared the staged elections that are still underway to be free and fair. What's making secular Egyptians like Qasim even more uncomfortable is that Islamists are emerging as the victors. The once-banned Muslim Brotherhood has collected well over 40% of the ballots so far, and the hardcore Salafists more than 20%. Many Egyptian liberals fear an Islamist-dominated parliament will try and replace Egypt's nascent democracy with a religious state like Saudi Arabia. Some analysts add that the Islamists are winning because secular parties are viewed by many Egyptians as a holdover from the Mubarak era. Khalid Fahmi, who chairs the history department at the American University in Cairo, explains what those voters are thinking.
It's mostly about our national identity, mostly religious identity, has been robbed of us, and it's time to return back to our roots. And the message is not much more complex than that.
The Brotherhood and Salafists have long been known for their charitable and social work. Fahmi adds that the Islamist movement is viewed as an honest broker that will bring badly needed relief to the country's mostly impoverished population.
It touches, however, a very resonant chord with millions of Egyptians who feel disenfranchised, who feel oppressed, who feel that the country has been usurped by a westernized, liberal, artistic, intellectual elite, and it's time to go back to the basics.
Other analysts say the Islamists benefited from the rush to elections by the military rulers who took over when Mubarak resigned. They say youth groups that were the backbone of the revolution didn't have enough time to form political parties. Plus, most of the candidates taking part in the multi-phased elections lacked political experience. Nabil Fahmi is a former Egyptian ambassador to the United States and dean of the School of Global Affairs and Public Policy at the American University in Cairo.
You need to have feet on the ground, You have to have a presence in communities. You have to have the mechanics of a party. While the Brotherhood and the Salafis didn't exist in the legal sense, they had a social network. So they had a presence out there, and they could mobilize.
But whether that mobilization will translate into political power isn't guaranteed, even for the Islamists. For one thing, the ruling military council insists it will retain ultimate authority even after the new parliament is seated, and the role of the legislature is still undefined. Its chief task will be to draft a new constitution. How to replace the old version that placed most power in the hands of the president is a matter of considerable debate. Former Ambassador Fahmy argues it would have made more sense if Egyptians had put off electing a parliament until after a new constitution was in place to define the role of government.
We could have elected a committee to do it the same way the Tunisians did.
NPR's Eleanor Beardsley was in Tunisia during the October elections for its constitutional assembly.
This Get Out the Vote video addressed how Tunisians, once cowed and miserable, are now filled with hope and pride. Turnout reached 90% in some areas, and just as in Egypt, the Islamists emerged the victors.
Oui, personnellement, c'est vrai, c'est la première fois que je vote.
Many voters, like high school teacher Lemjad Jemli, cast their ballots for the moderate Islamist Ennahda party. He was voting for the first time. But not every Tunisian is happy about the Islamist victory. Liberals there fear the newly elected Islamists will try to draft a constitution that ends the secular traditions of this former French colony. There have already been protests and clashes over how big a role Islam should play in their society. Fares Mabrouk is the founder of the Tunis-based Arab Policy Institute, a think tank that supports democratic change in the Middle East.
I don't think we can say that Tunisia is today democracy. Democracy is not only about free election, fair election. To have a democracy, it's also about having the right institutions, the right counterpowers, the right civil society. It's a learning process for all the actors inside our society, and it will take us a few years before saying that, yes, we succeeded our transformation.
That's a conclusion that many activists in Egypt have reached as well. But they face another obstacle, the Supreme Council of the Armed Forces. Activists and politicians here worry that the council will not honor its pledge to cede power to a civilian government once the cycle of elections is over. Saraya Sarhadi Nelson, NPR News, Cairo.
Coming up, corruption in Chinese journalism and the singer hoping to be the next leader of Senegal. Last summer, Chinese state-run TV accused a famous luxury brand of passing off locally built furniture as expensive Italian-made imports. Now a Chinese magazine says that TV report was filled with errors. For its part, the furniture company says it was blackmailed by the TV reporter concerned. NPR's Frank Langford has more from Shanghai.
The Da Vinci Furniture Company showroom in Shanghai looks like a salon in Versailles. A gilt-covered Italian-made grandfather clock cost more than $40,000. So it was big news when China Central Television, the government's flagship network known as CCTV, reported some of Da Vinci's ornate furniture didn't come from Italy, but from a common factory in South China. CCTV even found a factory salesman who appeared to corroborate the claim.
Painstaking efforts paid off. Reporters eventually found the mysterious supplier that makes furniture for Da Vinci.
Da Vinci denied the charges, but its sales tanked. Then, this week, Sai Xin, an aggressive Chinese business magazine, did something unusual. It published its own investigation of the CCTV story. Sai Xin pointed out that the salesman had recanted, and the general manager of the Chinese company that had supposedly built furniture for Da Vinci denied it in a web video.
When I saw your report on Da Vinci and my company, I felt utterly stunned and angry. The content of your report wasn't verified at all and was seriously misleading.
More damaging, Da Vinci claimed it paid the CCTV reporter more than $150,000 through a public relations company to halt further stories. Da Vinci provided bank transfer documents and a secretly recorded conversation. Zhang Jiran is an associate journalism professor at South China's Sun Yat-sen University. He says the episode highlights a common problem with Chinese journalism today.
When there's negative news, a company hires a public relations firm to buy advertisements or pay off journalists to suppress the news from coming out.
Over the years, reporters at smaller news organizations have been arrested for trying to extort money from various businesses, including a gas station, a food processing company, a coal mine, and a TV shopping network. Chang says the Da Vinci case stands out because it involves the Communist Party's biggest news institution.
CCTV is the national commercial network. It's a strange monster that has lots of power behind it. So, to expose corruption at CCTV takes a lot of courage.
The case also highlights a broader problem with China's one-party state. Its actions have few external checks. Zhang put it simply in English.
I think CCTV have too much power. Its power should be, you know, restricted and also should be monitored by other media.
The CCTV journalist who reported the Da Vinci story denies taking money. He calls the claim, quote, slander. So far, CCTV has no comment. Does all this mean Da Vinci is blameless?
Da Vinci's definitely done something. Maybe not to the extent that they're being accused of, but there's definitely something suspicious going on.
Liam Bussell works in Shanghai as a strategic marketing manager for Mintel, a global consumer research firm. He points out that customs officials have accused Da Vinci of using a Chinese free trade zone to make local furniture appear imported. Given the corruption in Chinese media and the volume of counterfeit products here, Bussell says it's often hard to find someone in these disputes who's totally clean. Frank Langfitt, NPR News, Shanghai.
This is Foreign Dispatch. I'm Kevin Beasley. It's not unheard of for popular singers or musicians to leverage their fame and try their hand at politics. Some have even ended up as the leaders of their countries. Now a singing sensation from Senegal is the latest to throw his hat into the political ring. Youssou N'Dour is challenging Senegal's political establishment in next month's presidential election. NPR's Fabia Quist-Octon filed this report.
Youssou N'Dour shot to international stardom in 1994 with this hit, 7 Seconds, sung with Nina Cherry. The Senegalese Mbalax musician has gone on to win a Grammy and become one of Africa's most influential and popular singers.
7 seconds away, just as long as I stay, I'll be waiting.
The 52-year-old, known simply as Youssou, grew up poor in Senegal's capital, Dakar. Today, he has his own radio station and television channel in Senegal, owns a national newspaper, and runs a business empire. He also served as a UN Goodwill Ambassador, espousing noble causes like fighting malaria. And now, Youssou N'Dour says he's ready to become Senegal's new president, and he anticipates victory in the election due February 26th.
I'm going to win this election in the first round, definitely. No question. I'm the most credible, most popular. And what I say is coming from the people.
Youssou N'Dour told the BBC he is confident of both local and international support.
I believe if I do here in Senegal good governance, freedom, and a lot of things the international community waiting for, you know, they're going to support me for my program. I think the world have to support new model. I want to change Senegal, then change Africa.
But will his undeniable popularity and street cred as a singer in Senegal necessarily translate into votes for Youssou as president? He's never held elective office, and questions are being raised over whether, without much formal education, he dropped out of school at age 13, he has the political smarts to lead Senegal. The West African nation proudly flaunted its democratic credentials when other countries in the region were battling coups, rebellions and civil wars. Senegalese opposition politician Abdoulaye Bachili.
You know, the question is whether an artist can be considered as somebody fit for leadership. This is the first time this kind of thing happened in Senegal.
There's bad blood between Senegal's opposition and the octogenarian president, Abdoulaye Wade, who's seeking a third term in office. His critics accuse Wade of political nepotism and trying to cling to power. Youssou N'Dour used to be close to the president, but has become one of his most outspoken critics. He and many others say it's time for Wade to go.
Abdoulaye Wade doesn't have the right to go to the election. Our constitution say no. I think also, you know, even I have great respect for him. He's too old. He's too old.
Youssou N'Dour is already chanting the mantra of the politician, making campaign promises to provide food, electricity, health, and education for all in Senegal. Ofer Biakou-Stockton, NPR News.
For more international coverage, you can listen to your local NPR station. You'll find a list at our website, npr.org. And while you're there, you can find more international stories by clicking on News and World. For NPR News, I'm Kevin Beasley.